Spirit Magazine, May 2023. The cover of this month's edition is a poppy field with a dark silhouetted tree in the time of a sunset. Spirit, May 2023. Dear readers, it's come time for me to graduate high school. I'm experiencing many feelings, some of which I did not anticipate. I have a great deal of anticipation about what comes next, and a great deal of gratitude for the things that have happened to me during the last 4 years alone. I feel quite a bit of relief to have made it this far. I must confess that a very big part of me feels sad. I will miss so much about my home and my school as I go off to college, and I don't feel happy when realizing that high school will no longer be my everyday reality. I feel very happy. Countless hours of blood, sweat, and tears went into the earning of the diploma that I will hold. I feel scared. I've grown a lot as we continue to write Spirit, and you have seen my voice change as a writer and grow, but I don't feel that I've grown enough for whatever the next phase of life will bring. How can I study and learn and eat and pray and live in a whole new place on my own? I will miss my brother and my mom and my sister and my family and home so much. I share all this because I don't think these feelings are exclusive to this change for me, but I feel quite encouraged by Ralph Waldo Emerson's words, and hey, we have the whole summer ahead of us. Love, Editor Janu. Editor Janu at thehappyherald.org is my email. That's EditorJanu at thehappyherald.org. So please share your thoughts, feelings, opinions, comments, questions, and everything with that email. And the code of the month for May 2023 is, what lies behind us and what lies before us are small matters compared to what lies within us. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Jane and the Fire by Janu. Jane is back. In 1958, young Jane has just moved to the city of Chicago, Illinois, with her parents and cousins. Even as Jane and her friends begin to make progress towards uncovering the mysteries of the Three Thugs, some mysterious forces seem to throw wrenches in the path of truth and justice. Already, someone seems to have kidnapped Jane's cousins and friends. Outside, a burly worker with a sack over his shoulder was pushing his way through pedestrians heading for the Hungry Eagle. He was heading towards a large black motor car, where another, equally burly workman waited already. But the sack wasn't still as it should have been. It moved, wriggling and kicking. The workman adjusted his grip on it, even as its efforts knocked his golf cap from his head. He bent to pick it up, and the other workman barked at him to hurry it. Jane felt her stomach sink. It had to be a kidnapping. She couldn't wait to warn anyone. She had to run and check. Without another thought, she dove for the door. "We haven't got all day, Jan," growled the workman waiting at the car. "Why don't you try lifting for a change then, Jigger?" snapped Jan, adjusting the sack over his other shoulder. "I've got a delicate shoulder just now," Jigger said piously. "Doctor's orders not to strain it." "I'd just like to see the doctor's note for evidence is what I'd like," Jan said with bottomless scorn. Jane had grabbed Don's bike. She pedaled furiously behind the black motor car. Fortunately, it was not very fast, and she found it quite easy to keep up. For one thing, Jigger was a terrible driver, maneuvering the wheel as if he was in a cartoon, overshooting in one direction and heaving the wheel in the opposite direction to compensate. Jan, too, was no help, complaining audibly of car sickness, and with Jigger's driving, who could blame him, and forcing Jigger to stop regularly yet suddenly, which caused the car to jolt massively. So, Jane found it quite easy to overtake the slow car, zooming in front of it and leaping off to stand directly in front of the car, glowering. "Oi!" cried Jigger. "Are you crazy? What do you want, an early grave?" "What the hell she's thinking of," Jan supported, though he still looked green as he shook a fist and held the other to the mouth. "What exactly do you have in your car?" Jane yelled, cutting right to the chase. Jigger and Jan stopped at once, freezing and exchanging guilty looks that screamed to Jane plain as day that it was indeed her friends trapped in the car. "You've got to open the back," demanded she again, "at once. I know just what's in the back of the van. You're a bunch of dreadful kidnappers." A man and his wife walking by stopped by to listen. "What's going on here?" the man began angrily. "What are you fellows up to?" "If you must so rudely really..." "If you inquire must so rudely really..." began Jan in an oily voice, when Jigger elbowed him sharply. "Idiot!" He passed Jan a wrinkled piece of paper, and Jan began again. "If you really must inquire so rudely," he oiled, "we're quite innocent salesfolk working humbly for a living." "Moron," growled Jigger. "If I'd said that part, I'd have done it right." Only Jane heard him, and she looked at him in confusion. "Well then," interjected another bystander, "open up the trunk of the vehicle and let's see what you've got in there." "Very well," beamed Jigger. "Let me show you gladly, gladly." Effusively beckoning, he led the group to the back of the vehicle and opened the door. Jane leapt forward, only to find the truck stacked with bricks. "We are bricks," Jigger said, grinning suavely. Jan smacked him on the back of the head. "We sell bricks," amended Jigger coolly. "Nothing to see here but bricks," Jan supplied, glaring at Jigger. He was right. There were stacks of bricks, and even as she climbed into the truck and looked around behind the piles, she could see no trace of her cousins or friends. "But I saw you carrying a sack," she cried, outraged. "Well," said the man who had helped her flag them down, "there isn't a sack here, only bricks." "Quite good, my right sir," said Jigger, smiling, which quickly turned to a frown as Jan stepped hard on his foot. "Quite right, my good sir."
"If you don't remember what to say, check the paper," hissed Jan.
Again, Jane was the only one to hear him. The bystanders dispersed after apologizing for their untoward interruption. A few gave Jane a dark look, A few gave Jane a dark look and a murmured threat about crying wolf. She stood frozen by her bike. As the van drove off, a brown piece of paper flew over into her face. "Things," she read, "to say if you get caught."
What?
Where are Jane's friends? Will she rescue them? Read on to find out. Next, we have Fruit of the Month, May 2023, Pineapple, Math, and Deliciousness. Did you know that all pineapples have a bit to do with math? If the pineapple you're holding is a real pineapple, its spirals will follow the Fibonacci sequence of numbers. Inexplicably, pineapples belong neither to the pine family nor the apple family, but to the berry family. Native to the tropics, it is used frequently as a flavor around the world, in Asian sweets and in baking in America and in Europe. Pineapples are nutrient-rich, containing vitamin C, vitamin B, copper, potassium, magnesium, iron, folate, and others. Including pineapple in your diet regularly can help stave off diseases. Pineapples are rich in antioxidants, which combat oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is connected to impaired immunity, weakened heart health, diabetes, and inflammation. Bromelain, contained in pineapples, works to support digestive enzymes by breaking down big proteins to be better absorbed by the small intestine. Thus, eating pineapple can support digestion. Studies show that eating pineapple can reduce inflammation. Additionally, pineapple may mitigate symptoms of influenza as well as COVID-19. Anti-inflammatory properties of pineapple might ease arthritis. Eating pineapple regularly can speed up recovery after surgery or after injury. Do you like pineapple? Email us to share new thoughts or new fruit ideas. Next, we have a rock painting exhibit of four paintings, one of a minion, one of a little yellowish-orange bird, one of a blue bird, and one of a tiger. A beautiful artwork in Spirit magazine. Next, we have Charan Choran Pandian, The Illustrious History of South India. You may have heard of the Taj Mahal, the Red Fort, and of India's capital city of Delhi, or of the striking beauties of the Himalayas, or of Jammu and Kashmir. But few outside of South India have studied the three crowned kings, Charan, Choran, and Pandian. These, often called the three ancient Tamil empires, or the three chosen by heaven, rather than being individual kings, these three ancient dynasties ruled all of South India from sea to sea, representing a time in Tamil history of integration and political unity. Pictured here are unknown kings from the Choran, which is there are two kings pictured here. One has a red tiger flag, and Pandyan, the green fish flag, regimes. The most, however, is known about the Choran kingdom. Charan Choran Pandyan ruled a swath of land known as Thamulakam. The Choran Empire, also spelled Cholan, C-H-O-L-A-N, had a powerful navy which allowed the first recorded king, Karikalan Cholan, to travel and fight in places as far as Ceylon or Sri Lanka. From the year 3 CE to about 8 CE, the reign of the Pallavas, yet another dynasty of kings, waylaid Choran rule. In the 8th century CE, Vijayalayan Choran and his son Aditya Choran freed their people from Pallava rule, beginning the full sovereignty of Choran history. Aditya Choran established the Choran kingdom as an independent people, and from him the systematic history of the Chorans can be traced. His son, Paranthakan Choran I, was a brilliant military strategist and renowned soldier. His conquest of the Pandyan kingdom and its capital Madurai, as well as his invasion of Ceylon. It is said that Paranthakan Choran I was the founder of the power and greatness of the Choran house. Unfortunately, despite his efforts, a weak succession of kings after him left the kingdom in turmoil. After some years, it was Rajaraja Choran's ascension to the throne that brought peace and prosperity back to the Chorans. Rajaraja Choran was unquestionably the greatest of the Choran kings. He defeated the Charan and the Pandyan kingdoms, and, with the aid of a powerful navy, conquered kingdoms as far apart as Singapore, Thailand, Myanmar, and Malaysia. Tuticorin, or Thoothukudi, was established as a port of the Chorans. But in addition to being a soldier and conqueror, Rajaraja Choran was a renowned patron of the arts. He built a stunningly beautiful stone temple of the god Shiva in Tanjore or Thanjavur, which stands just as beautiful today. In addition, he was tolerant of other religions besides Hinduism, donating liberally to the Burmese Buddhist temple. For a time, the power of the Chorans continued to grow. Rajaraja Choran's son, Rajendra Choran, proved himself to be a worthy successor to the throne. As a prince, he had assisted his father with the administration of his kingdom, and upon ascending the throne, continued to uphold and expand the empire. Much more can be said about the Choran regime. The Pandyans established their kingdom as a center of trade and sovereignty, sending embassies twice to the Roman Emperor Augustus. Marco Polo visited the Pandyans twice, reporting the capital, Kayal, to be a bustling and beautiful city. A bustling port and a beautiful city. The Charans were also powerful maritime conquerors and warriors. The illustrious history of these kingdoms alone is a source of pride to Tamil Nadu and the Deccan still. Jot Thoughts Reviews, Critique on Literature and More, May 2023. A Man Called Otto. Fall in love with the grumpiest man in the world, says the poster for A Man Called Otto. And as unbelievably presumptuous as that tagline is, it's somewhat true. A Man Called Otto is a beautiful story, a story about life, a heartwarming promise that the sun will come out tomorrow. The story follows a superb Tom Hanks, a very cranky, very sad homeowner with a heart of gold, living in a picturesque suburb where the snow is stark white and beautiful and the homes are postcard perfect. Otto is surrounded by cheery, friendly neighbors whom he lovingly christens idiots. When a young family moves in across the street from him, they begin to draw him out of his shell of sorrows to embrace life to the fullest. There's not much to say about this one except that it's a thoroughly charming story about love and friendship and the importance of asking for help. Everyone has their own problems, but with each other's support, they begin to surmount their difficulties. Otto likes people to leave him alone, but his grayscale life is filled with color when he begins again to connect with those around him, Marisol, Tommy, Jimmy, Ruben, and Anita. It's a beautiful must-watch, and I would love to add, it is very funny. Fine Arts Spirit Magazine, May 2023. There are three images here, three digital photos, and there is a tag here. Are you an artist, poet, photographer, or a writer? Send us your artwork, composition, photography, etc. to see it featured in a future edition of Spirit. Email editor Janu, that's editorjaanu, at thehappyherald.org with inquiries. Ask Clever Kali. Send your questions to editorjanu at thehappyherald.org. Dear Clever Kali, why do trees and swamps not bloom sometimes? I see thick forests which suddenly give way to bare wood trees in swamps. Is there a real-life Shrek tearing down the foliage? Sincerely, Curious Kathy. Dear Curious Kathy, great question. Where I live, there are many marshy swamps lining the highways. Sometimes, as you say, dead trees rise up in the middle of swampy patches of land. Too much water in a swamp can cause trees to struggle to regrow. Like the old adage, too much of a good thing. Some trees can thrive in water, like mangroves, which grow well in swamps and marshy areas. Clever Kali. Dear Clever Kali, help! I bought brand new shoes, and they're already dirty. I just got them, and I want them to be clean and last a long time. Help! Sincerely, Stressing Sam. Dear Stressing Sam, have no fear. I'm no cobbler, but I can say there is certainly hope for you. My favorite shoes, white sneakers, got dirty recently. Just use a little plain no-gel toothpaste on a brush and gently wipe away the dirt. Clever Kali. Wellness Central, May 2023. Here's to health and happiness. This month's article is called Time is a Limited Commodity. We have probably all experienced time flying when we've had fun, or time seeming to drag on for hours when we're struggling through something difficult. I've closed my eyes, felt my head drop onto a pillow, and felt barely a second has passed before it's time to wake up again. On the other hand, I've sat down to work hard and felt that I've been studying for hours, only to check the clock and find that barely half an hour has passed. Time can feel very relative, is what I'm trying to say. However, it's very limited. We only have 24 hours each day, and the world is so rich with so much to experience and learn that it doesn't feel like a lot of time. We all have dreams and goals to accomplish, and things we want to get done or enjoy each day. So, to be as happy as the student pictured here, it's important to make time a friend and ally in our efforts. Though most people have problems with time management, myself included, sharing our own best practices is a great way to be more productive as a society. All for one and one for all, am I right? With that, here are some of my best practices for time management as of right now, a high school summer. Make to-do lists. I used to be a very careful person, writing down assignments to do in middle school, but as high school began, I stopped using a planner during the day at school. Trying to remember everything, especially when club meetings and activities are compounded into the mix, means that one is flying around by the seat of one's pants all the time. Making a list helps ensure that nothing falls between the cracks and gets forgotten, so that each thing happens at the right time. 2. Organize your spaces. An organized space, leaving more time to work and play, and less time devoted to finding or neatening things, is definitely conducive to time management. I find that I am the most productive when I am in a neat and organized space devoid of distractions, and I have the most fun when a place is neat and not stressfully messy. Recently, I've tried going to the public library once or twice for a change of pace and space to do work. This way, I can try sitting at different desks in different environments, at spots without any of the stationery or artwork that I have at my desk. This novelty and emptiness makes for a neat little echo chamber where I can lock in and feel productive, especially for writing work and specific assignments. I also enjoy sitting at a table outside. For me, the atmosphere and noise doesn't affect me as much as how organized the space is. My own desk is the current bane of my work existence, being incredibly messy and hard to keep neat. Oh well, at least there's progress to be made on that front. Music? I used to listen to a lot more music than I do now. I love music and think it definitely allows me to focus more by tuning out other noises sometimes. However, music for me is also a huge distraction, particularly if I enjoy the songs I'm listening to. I'm great at tuning out noise, but if I like the song I'm hearing, then I want to start singing along and end up typing the song lyrics instead of the essay I need to complete, like I did writing "Take Me Home, Country Roads, to the Place I Belong." I compromise now by listening to playlists of only instrumental music most of the time while working. I compile the playlist of music ahead of time and listen to the same one every time. This also has the benefit of the so-called Pavlov Bell effect of certain songs. Certain playlists, like the Mandalorian soundtrack, trigger a homework instinct in me. I listen to the same albums while writing my college essays, which, retrospectively, I actually enjoyed. I recognize that the points mentioned above are mostly productivity pointers, but I believe that maximizing productivity allows me to make the most of my time. What are your pointers for using time? We would love to hear from you. Share your thoughts and advice on how you respect your own time best. Finally, we've got a fantastic spirit cartoon, The Monkey and the Rascal by Thumbu. The rascal Wheatgrass was on his way to graffiti some wall. "Heh heh, I'm gonna be such a nuisance when I paint this wall." "Psst, psst," he sprays some paint out of his can. Wheatgrass graffitied the wall of the school. You really have to see it to see how funny it is, but there's Wheatgrass crouching by the wall of his school, and he's painting a sign that says Wheatgrass. Little did Wheatgrass know, he was being watched. Sambunga the monkey lived in the tree beside the school. He watched Wheatgrass graffiti the wall, mesmerized. As Wheatgrass lay down to take a nap, Sambunga crept down and began to use a spray can. He starts graffitiing onto, so there's Wheatgrass lying down taking a nap by a tree, and Sambunga painted his own face, and then he wrote "Monkey Sambunga" on the tree and on Wheatgrass. When Wheatgrass later awoke, a lifelong rivalry between the monkey and the rascal was born. There's Wheatgrass with a little spray of Wheatgrass hair, and it says EY and then MBU on his shirt because Sambunga wrote "Monkey Sambunga" on his shirt. The end, and that is the end of Spirit May 2023 as well. Please do share your thoughts and feedback with us. We are so grateful to have you as readers, and wishing you a wonderful day and a wonderful rest of the spring and summer. Remember, readers, we rise by lifting others.